Welcome to the No Direction Podcast, PaizoCon 2017 seminar coverage. Remember, we con when you can't.
It's exciting. Every year this event has occurred and has been called the Rules Q&A, which it has never been, but is now called the correct name so that you guys will know what it actually is about.
Logan Bonner.
Woo! Ready.
All right, well, we might as well get rolling here. We'll keep this fast moving, and we're gonna talk for a bit about some of the things that are about to come out, and then we're just gonna open it up to questions.
Shall we cut the door?
And if Steven doesn't like how this goes, he's gonna start cutting people. Anybody want to change seats?
No, there's a very important reason why I made sure that we need to protect Logan
so,
and me.
So, hi there, everybody. This is the Pathfinder RPG Q&A session. This is our kind of annual seminar to kind of talk about what's up with the Pathfinder RPG and what's coming out. But this year is kind of a weird year. We don't have a book coming out at Gen Con. We have Starfinder coming out. So we're going to talk a little bit about that.
That's coming in a book.
Yeah, no, I don't. Yeah. But we don't have a Pathfinder RPG book launching at Gen Con this year like we normally do. Because we wanted to clear the deck for Starfinder, and we had to put all of our resources in that. Now, this team worked on Starfinder, but we are not on the Starfinder team. So we can talk about it a little bit, but they did most of the work, and they can answer most of your questions. We just tinkered with some of the mechanics and stuff. So we'll be happy to kind of talk a little bit about that, but I don't want to steal any of their thunder or give away anything that they don't want to. They don't want given away, but then again, they're playing it over there.
So
I suppose at this point in time,
it should be fine.
Game.
Owen told me that Logan and I count as being on the Starfinder team for that book.
Yeah, you certainly spent a lot of time working on it. So
yes.
So hi, I'm Jason Bulman. I'm the lead designer at Paizo, and we'll let people introduce themselves.
Hi everyone. I'm Steve Redding McFarland, the senior designer.
I'm Mark Seifter. I'm designer at Paizo.
I'm Logan Bonner. I'm also a designer. Paizo, formerly a developer, formerly an editor.
Yeah, you keep getting stolen by various teams. Eventually, he's going to end up in sales.
He's multi. He's multi-class. He's going to take a prestige class.
Buy our books.
Buy our books.
Buy
wow,
our books.
Is that a critic reference?
Yeah.
Nice.
Approved.
All right.
Great old school.
So, as many of you have seen, earlier this year we just recently released Bestiary 6 and the Adventurer's Guide. You guys have those, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about them. You want to know more? Open it up and take a look. They are well known quantities. You can find them over in the store. The big thing that's about to come out, obviously, that has been the entire focus of this show has been Starfinder. Starfinder launches this Gen Con. It is a science fantasy role-playing game in which you will take your fight to the stars with seven new classes, new races.
Seven races.
It has laser guns and power armor and jetpacks, and it also has magic and a lot of the things you're familiar with. If you know Pathfinder, you will have a leg up learning Starfinder. It is basically the same engine. You will still be rolling a d20. You still want to get high, right? It is the game.
Steven definitely does.
Phrasing? Are we not doing phrasing?
This panel always goes sideways. I don't know why that is.
Now there's going to have to be a giant leaf over top of it instead of the west.
It is Washington.
On no direction.
Fair, yeah.
Damn it.
All right.
Thank you, Jason.
You're welcome. Yeah, no, at least I could do.
Over 420 new items.
Yeah.
At least it's not taint like in Horror Adventures.
No, that's fair. Yeah, I know. In past years, we've had troubles. So we're all really excited for Starfinder. You can now demo it here at the show. The Delves have both swapped over to Starfinder, so if you want to give it a shot, you can go do that. You can play, a Vesk or Kasatha, or all the new races and classes are there for you to play with. And do they have all six? Seven?
No, they have four.
No.
Four.
In fact,
the android operative, at the Delve, the Vesk soldier, the Kasatha mystic. And
oh no, it's the Sheeran mystic. So in fact, you cannot play a Kasatha.
Oh, all right. Well, forget that then. But yeah, and we're not demoing the Starship Combat here because we couldn't get it up and running. But we will be demoing that very soon. One of the big features of Starfinder is that it's got an entire robust system for Starship creation and Starship combat, in which everybody on the ship takes one of the roles on the ship, like the engineer or gunner or the pilot or the captain. And you all have different roles that you take during the round because you're all trying to pilot one ship, right? You know, not everybody has their own spaceship. So, you know, we wanted to make sure that the system was robust and gave everybody something to do. That way you didn't have like the, you know, the Shadowrun problem where it's like, oh, it's a Decker encounter. Well, the rest of us are going to go get a sandwich while you go and hack the net. So we wanted to make sure that the Starship Combat system was robust and gave everybody something to do. So we're pretty excited about that. Lots of new gear, lots of new items. I mean, obviously with it being a science fantasy role-playing game, we scaled back magic a bit to give technology a room to shine, right? You know, to do its thing. It's kind of hard to justify, you know, spending all that money on a rocket launcher when somebody can just, you know, cast fireball all the time. So magic gets scaled back a little bit to allow technology to do its thing. I'm trying to think. What else?
I mean, that's not to say that.
Talk about? Yeah, no, that's not to say that there isn't fireball.
In fact,
but
you can build someone who casts fireball all the time, and if you do, right when you get fireball, it does a lot more damage than the rocket launcher, but you can't cast it that many times per day. So it's a balance.
I cast rocket launcher.
Magic is good in some ways. Technology is good in other ways. Maybe technology is more efficient. It's easy to get it out to everyone. You don't need a lot of special training. Yep. So one doesn't predominate over the other.
Just pull the trigger.
But that's right. I would say in terms of asking us questions about Starfinder rather than ones where they just should definitely ask the Starfinder design team, it should be Starship Combat, since you wrote the first draft of it, we're an okay group to...
we can answer stuff about
answer
that,
about but... And... I guess math. I know there's at least one person on the forums.
Well,
if you're listening,
the classes in general and the tactical rules.
We know the math, but
so,
no one cares about math.
Yeah, Starfinder was kind of an interesting project
for us
because we worked on that a long time ago. We were kind of the first team, and
you and Jason worked on that a long time ago.
Yes,
that's
right.
We worked on it a long
time ago.
We
were
a
protein.
We worked on it a long time ago. We put together like the race section and the class section and Starship Combat, the skill section and the combat chapter and everything else, and basically said, okay, here's what we think should be in it, and gave it to the Starfinder team with copious notes and everything else. And then Logan and Mark went back in, mostly to do equipment?
Not really. Mostly to do math.
Oh.
And everything, but a lot of math. So some of that was in equipment, so there would be like weapons, and we needed to do the math on the weapon math to get to work out. And like, what? But what if there was another component that we added to all the damage that for weapons that was not with the weapons, that was part of the person's skill? Oh, well, so does that mean that we need to make the weapon chart again? Yeah, okay. So then that kind of thing. So we were the number crunchers, and we filled in any whatever section they needed a deep design pass on, basically.
But even flipping through the book now, even though it was such a long time, I'm like, holy crap, there's a lot of just personally my work in it. I'm like, oh, I forgot I did that.
The Sheeran owe a huge amount to you, Stephen.
Yeah. And the Kasatha was a race that I designed for Pathfinder originally.
They were.
So
yeah.
I'm like, there's a lot of my babies in this. They're ugly babies.
You got the most races.
You have a question?
Given how much you did on Starfinder, is there going to be any bleed back? Is there anything that you did there that might find its way into Pathfinder?
I think in some ways, Starfinder gave us some opportunities to play with some systems that we can't really change in Pathfinder, right?
Yeah.
You know, one of the things
we can't change how full attacks work. That
yeah, exactly.
Sailed,
yeah, no.
17 years ago,
some of those systems are locked in place. But when it comes to Starfinder, we were able to change some things up. So like characters have not just hit points, but they also have stamina.
Mm-hmm.
And stamina is like they work just like hit points. They get shot off you just like hit points. But between encounters, you can spend a point of resolve, take a rest, and regain all of your stamina. Right.
And a lot of that is because we didn't want you to have a 9-level cleric to be able to heal. So
we wanted to kind of take the pressure off, having to build your group a certain way for Starfinder. We wanted.
So if you operate without a mystic, that is a viable thing.
So it takes the pressure off, and it gives some of the dramatic pacing you see in a lot of science fiction and science fantasy movies. they're not about the 15-minute adventuring day really that much. They're often like, there's a big firefight, then there's this pause where everyone gets together, they talk, there's some kind of scene, I'm actually your father, something else happens.
Well, yeah, to use that example, right, we didn't want Han Solo and Luke to break into the Death Star, make it all the way to the princess, get her out of the cell, and then be like, oh, well, we better rest. So we'll just go inside the room and lock the door, and we'll all take a nap. I'm sure nothing bad will happen.
Yep.
We wanted a system that kind of stretched that out and allowed you to have kind of the narrative structure that you needed. For science fiction, science fantasy games, that's far more important, right? I mean, I think our biggest impact was kind of changing some of the core tenets of the game that allowed it to be science fantasy, right? So, you know, scaling back magic a bit to give room for technology, changing the way hit points work, shifting the focus of the game kind of away from melee combat into ranged combat, right? Everybody's got a gun. So if everybody has a gun, we need more robust rules and more features that hang off ranged combat.
We also buffed certain things that melee characters could already do in Pathfinder to make it more threatening than it was before, so that you have an advantage. I do want to be the melee guy. Okay.
Yeah.
Your attacks of opportunity are a huge benefit now, more than they were before.
Yeah, as far as stuff that can actually like go from Starfinder back into Pathfinder, there's not really a lot because so much of the new stuff is conceptual. And there's a lot of things like, there are new vehicle rules and chase rules and stuff, but we already have those in Pathfinder in a different system.
That said, if you want to put your wizard in a spaceship, you could probably port those rules back.
There's some individual stuff, like certain spells might be able to be like, well now we show you what the old version was from the Pathfinder era. Like that kind of smaller stuff might work its way
through.
But most of the systemic stuff is just too specific. Too stuff.
You might be able to, like, if you're good at math, you might be able to try to use the new full attacks, but it would be very hard.
It's really
it would require a lot of reverse energy.
You could potentially use EAC, energy AC, and kinetic AC, and that wouldn't be that hard, but it might make certain characters really inaccurate.
And energy AC was designed to basically be the stand-in for touch attacks.
Yes.
Right? I mean, so, anyway, Starfinder, we're really excited to see it. The Starfinder team is super pumped, and the book is gorgeous. And for those of you who are interested in it, I'm sure you're going to like it. It looks like a lot of fun, and we're proud to have been a part of it and are really cheering on that team. And we're looking forward to the huge lines at Gen Con for it. So I heard that as of this morning, all of the Starfinder Society tables are sold out.
Yep.
They all sold out on the first day.
Don't worry, guys, because Tanya and I think especially Bob reshift the offerings. They switch the tickets and create more of the ones that are all sold out and fewer of the ones that aren't. So they'll always be jiggering those. That doesn't mean you can't get one if you don't have one yet. So just keep constantly refreshing. No,
the refresh key over and over.
Gen Con loves me.
So after Starfinder releases, there's the Book of the Damned. That's a book that is now in the RPG line. It collects all the previously printed Books of the Damned and adds a lot of new material to that. We didn't really have a lot to do with that book. That book was mostly a collection, but it is in the RPG line. But the book that we did have a fair amount to do with is Ultimate Wilderness.
Yep.
And Stephen, why don't you talk about Ultimate Wilderness?
Well, I mean, it's the newest offering of our Ultimate line. You kind of know the gig with that. We're going to unleash the new Shifter class, which is very exciting. One of the fundamental changes that we kind of didn't put in the solicitation text, so we could unleash it here, is that we are also introducing three new races into the game, and they're kind of... they're kind of different sort of races for what we normally do. One is the Gatewing. It's a fae creature that originally was in the
Advanced Race Guide, right?
Advanced Race Guide for the race building rules. And the Gorin, I should say. I always want to say Gorin. Brand new race is the Vine Leshy. So those of you who love Leshy can now play one as a character race. So
written by
those
Linda.
Of you who hate Leshy, I'm sorry.
You do have to. Yeah, you have to replace your charisma with your adorableness statistic. Yeah.
So, and those are going to be sort of full blown, like the advanced race guide. So you're going to have a lot of options for those races coming right out the bat. And then, of course, you're going to have a bunch of archetypes, a big chunk for the shifter as well, spells, magic items, those kind of things. And then a very large section that we blow out animal companions and familiars, including archetypes and feats and everything else for those things as well. There's a lot of animals in that book. And then we've got a section that talks about adventuring in the wilderness. It's a little more GM-facing. You know, how to do narrative exploration that also works with the exploration rules that we put in Ultimate Campaign, a system for generating weather, how to forage. We've got large sections on the First World and the Green Faith and stuff like that. So. Of course, it's wilderness based, not all trees. We got deserts, we've got mountains, oceans, and everything else. But even if you're not playing one of those wilderness characters, you'll find something in there. So for the animal companions, we did a lot of really good player companions, and we grabbed a lot of that information and then added to it. And so the familiar section, as I was going through all of that material, there was an interesting Ironstone, the weird familiar, and I was almost like, oh, I don't know if that goes in that book, and I'm like, oh, screw it, Wizards need something to do. So I went ahead and put it in there as well. It's I think people will really enjoy the book. It's in a funny way, it's a long time coming.
It's kind of the book, yeah. I mean.
We almost did it instead of intrigue.
A number of times.
Yes.
And we just never pulled the trigger. And we were finally like, you know what, it's time.
Yep.
You know, we've done, you know, Ultimate Combat gives you everything to fight with. Ultimate Magic gives you a whole bunch of spells and for magic classes. And Intrigue covers your social characters and your skill-based characters. And we're like, we haven't done anything for Rangers and Druids. Really.
Right.
I mean, they get a little bit in some of those other books. But the book wasn't really about them. They're kind of just an addendum to those books. So this book really kind of gives those characters a lot of love.
Yeah, I was as I was explaining it once I was over at dinner with Kim Mohan, and he was editor-in-chief of Dragon Magazine when I was a kid, and he was like, oh, Stephen, I did that book quite early. Why are you redoing that book? My book's still good.
But like, I remember around the time when we did Intrigue, it was this close to being Wilderness. Wilderness was ahead for a day, then Intrigue. It was
we kind of went back and forth.
But if you're really
saying there was an Intrigue in Intrigue One,
there was,
right?
Of course, Intrigue One over Wilderness.
Oh,
but
Lord.
If you're interested in some, we spilled a whole bunch of secrets about Wilderness in the Ultimate Wilderness panel earlier in the show, so you could probably find that on No Direction.
Well, we should probably talk a little bit about the new class, though, the Shifter.
Oh, yeah. So the Shifter is sort of the martial arm of Druidic Circles, at least in the base class. The archetype gives you ways to play with that theme without being that. So they also speak Druidic. They also will not teach it to you.
Finally, another character that Druids can talk to.
Well, hold on. Leshies all speak Druidic too. So
oh,
as
yeah.
a race,
cheaters.
You can speak to the Vine Leshy.
It's a full base attack bonus. It deals with, it uses Wild Shape so all of the cool feats for the Druids have, and we're expanding
about the same level.
What's that?
Do they get Wild Shape about the same level?
About the same level, yeah. They're a little bit more limited in that as you start, you get an aspect and you get more aspects, and those aspects are themed very similar to the hunter aspects. And so in the beginning, you can't turn into a bear, but you can have some bear-like properties, and of course claws. And so you can
all the time.
You can be
claws all the time,
and then eventually you can turn into a bear, and then you can layer on that aspect on top of it. So you can be more bear than bear, or
double bear.
At about
we
at
let
about
you
the same
be
time,
double bear.
You start getting secondary aspects, and so maybe you want something else, and so
you can choose an owl. And then you can become an owl bear.
No, I don't like that name. Let's go with bear owl.
Well, no, but those are actually distinctly different builds. Because one of them is the bear that has owl benefits, and the other one is the flying owl that has bear claws. And right. Yes, they are different.
We have to clarify that or the editors will kill us.
Yeah, no, they get very upset.
They're going to kill us anyway.
These are entirely different.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, as you go up in level, not only do you, while you're a little bit more focused in your wild shape, for a number of reasons, one of which so new players don't have to go searching through every single bestiary to figure out exactly what they want to play, you can mix and meld those things using a chimeric aspect. And so in a lot of ways, you're a more versatile shapeshifter than even the druid.
Yeah.
Yep. Limited but versatile. Easier to use. Yeah. I would say someone who does pilfer through every bestiary and knows all the forms and is constantly using 80 different forms in their thing is going to say, well, no, not my druid has more different form options. But the shifter is one that you can actually wrap your head around. And when you crunch the math of five different or however many aspects and five different things, you multiply out to a pretty big number anyway without having to look all them all up.
Well, it allows you to kind of mix and match to get the type of character expression that you want.
Yep.
Right?
And some of them are really sort of, you know, beastial, I'm going to beat the crap out of you. Others are very good for, you know, kind of stealth and reconnoitering. And so, yeah, you can have a variety of shifters. It would be really interesting to see when people put their hands on them. Thank you.
Yeah.
What is like a good bird wolf build? Because I want to be a Simmer. Just like a rainbow color shifter.
Yeah, so there you go.
No, you could do that. You go, I would say wolf first and then owl or eagle or something. But I would also say for those of you who are familiar with the vigilante archetypes and how they
but only for fruits.
The ones Amanda wrote in Ultimate Intrigue, how they took you like pretty far afield from the original vigilante. Yeah. I would compare the shifter archetypes in this book to those and say that some of them will take you way away from that I'm the Druid's Grove Guardian. Like, there's one that Stephen talked about that his favorite, that, do you want to tell them?
Yeah,
you told it at the other seminar.
It's kind of an Uzi shifter. So if you're like a certain,
was that
Uzi or Boozy?
Well, they're not mutually.
Yeah, it could be a
Boozy. The power of King Kalian.
You forgot you get to put two different things together when you're shifted.
So if you ever wanted a character who you know could sleep in a bucket like a favorite constable from a science fiction show, that's
in fact, you may have to sleep in a bucket because right. It's all you can do if you're that ooze guy to actually keep a humanoid form.
Oh wait, is when you shift, you have to shift back into humanoid form?
Yes.
Like your true form is ooze?
Yes. Yeah. It's a character who's been, like,
I missed that.
You've been dissolved by an ooze, and, like, you can actually take the archetype retroactively if you're killed by an ooze and the GM allows it. Kind of like the reanimated medium that you can take with your medium to reanimate your...
That's going to be really messy. The rest of the group's going to... I don't think they're going to want to put up with that.
Probably not. That's the best part.
Don't put up my character.
Accidentally leave your bucket outside and the horse drinks you.
Oh.
Yeah.
This is what happens when you let Robert Brooks write like whatever archetypes he wants for the shifter. True. That was one of his flex archetypes.
Yeah, he did send me an email. He's like, is this too far? And I'm like, no.
No, we're doing this.
No such thing. Stephen doesn't understand it too far.
No. Too far is something for small minds.
Fair. So that's Ultimate Wilderness. So that's scheduled to release in what, November?
November.
Yes, November.
Yeah. Is the release date for that, and it's working its way through our offices now.
Yeah.
There's a book after that, but we can't talk about it yet. Unfortunately, it hasn't been announced yet. It'll
Gen
be announced at Gen Con, so we'll be able to talk about it then. So that kind of wraps up what we can actually talk about right at the moment. So we'll kind of open it up to questions.
Well, it's a Q&A.
Let's give the usual disclaimer, which is specific crunchy rules questions, we are not going to answer those.
Yeah.
Or at best, we will give you a very flippant answer that is not actionable and will make your character cry.
or we'll just ban your character. It's right. Fine.
We normally have to research and look at text for a while.
To be honest, one of the very first PaizoCons that we ran this seminar, we didn't have that caveat and regretted it 5 minutes in.
Oh.
primarily because people asked rules questions, and they were good questions, and they were difficult. So we broke out books and started looking, and it got really boring really fast. So
we might get Stephen to have like a semantic tantrum, like.
Right,
this
right.
word means what the word says.
Everything is something
about,
we made up.
Let's talk about rolling stats versus buying stats.
Oh, so, yeah.
No,
let's do that.
No. we are not having that debate.
One of the when I first started at Paizo, God, over 6.5 years ago, I went on the message boards, and in the message boards back then, people would mine it for like rules arguments. Yeah, and one of the first things I told them is like, I'm going to give you my opinion, but don't take that as an official argument. And people freaked out. They're like, what do you mean? Like, no, you said this. And I'm like, yeah, but this is just my opinion. We'll release errata and official documentation. But and that goes for James Jacobs, too.
Yeah.
So, and James was all like, really? And I'm like, yeah, James.
Yeah, that's enough time. We can't be giving rules clarifications in the middle of a thread. That's impossible for people to find.
Now, Stephen, would you be surprised to believe that in fact, someone who has referenced your post that you made that day that said these are never official and called it, quote, one of the darkest days in the history of the message board?
I'm actually proud of that.
Yeah.
It's good.
You know who you are.
It's a good thing that our fans on the message boards don't get too melodramatic. All right. So we'll open it up to questions. If anybody has questions about right up here in front.
So with the shifter, I know with the druid, it's worked off like the V-shaped mechanic setup.
Yeah.
Yes.
Is the druid going down the same line, or are they working it, or are you trying to work something different? Because the V-shaped spell was, the V-shaped spell really limited the development of the wild shape.
Yeah.
And really complicated how people understood it.
So, going back to that original decision, which was now 9 years ago.
Yeah.
That was done to rein in the kind of polymorph problem, right? Which was you cast a spell, and now there are 1,200 pages of options for you to figure out.
Yeah.
Oh, and you're going to do that in the middle of the game. So everything, you know, you can hear the needle on the record as the game comes crashing to a halt while the druid tries to figure out what form they're taking.
And now I'm pun.
Yeah. And to top it off, there were like a handful of forms that were just the best choices. Yeah. Right? If you chose anything else, it was a bad choice. So V-shape and all the spells that go with it were an attempt to be like, yeah, you can turn into a thing, but this is the most it can give you. I think, you know, having the shifter work on similar rules, although I think
it's not codified, the same.
Isn't it?
It says specifically what you get.
My curiosity was, if he is working off the similar rule set, or if he had his own.
And one of the reasons why it's working off the similar rule set is we wanted it to work with legacy things that already talked to Wild Shape and those things as well. And to pull out the guts would have taken probably about 5 pages of rules explanation to let you do that. And so while we know that there are some issues there, the issues in the long run are rather slight. And so, yeah, we didn't rock the boat. If we were doing it for Starfinder, you might see something a little bit different, you know, where we can kind of go back and rethink some things.
Yeah.
But, you know, that ship is kind of sailed, and it works. So.
Although there are some differences. It does say that it's like Wild Shape, but rather than Beast Shape, it specifically tells you what abilities you get, rather than leave you hanging looking on the menu of abilities. And sometimes
we brought all that into the class.
Because we have a set number of things you can choose from, they can say for each one what you get. And sometimes it's something that wasn't on the beast ship menu.
So in some ways, the shifter is a little bit better at those limited shapes than a druid would be taking similar shapes.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, a druid and a shifter might both turn into a bear, but the shifter might actually be a little bit better.
Yeah.
A little bit
druid
more.
Druid looks like a bear,
more,
and the shifter little, is
little
a bear.
Shifter is a bear,
more,
bigger claws.
A little bit more bearable.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, that's it, I'm out.
Yeah.
Another question about the shifter. Hopefully that's not what we talk about. But is, from what you guys have been saying with the, I remember I was there for the wilderness, ultimate wilderness hole, and from there you said that one, it would have the druid rules for armor, so no metal armor, gotta go with wood or leather or whatever, and then it would possibly get a bonus for not wearing armor.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Which makes it sound similar to almost kind of like a natural attack sort of monk. which my concern there is that you end up with, there's too many attributes that you need to be good to make it a more than playable character. I understand, like, in a homebrew game, you can work around that, but in, like, PFS, where you only have a certain number of points, if I need four stats to be above 12, I might run into an issue there. Is it, like, wisdom-based? Is there a way to get dex to damage? Like, any of that sort of stuff going on?
So basically, we wanted the shifter's primary thing, you know, based on what flavor of shifter. You're either going to go a high dex build or a high strength build. Most of them, I think, are going to go high strength build. I am 95% certain, and it is Sunday at the con, that the defense is wisdom based. And part of that was we didn't want you to rely on totally one stat. We did want you to kind of spread around stats. And interestingly enough, we were able to do that a little bit better in Starfinder as well. And so you, so sneak peek, take a look at that as an interesting solution to the split class problem, or the split ability class problem. But we are going to make you make some difficult choices. But I don't think the problems are as strong as the monk.
You have a lot of options, yeah. Because if you want to go unarmored, that's the more wisdom-y build that really needs to have a pretty high wisdom. Yeah. But if you go with armor, you're still not going to want to dump it. I mean, you work with the druid, you should have some wisdom of the nature. It doesn't really have to be that high. You don't use it for all that much. So you can do the strength build, the dex build. There's some built-in stuff to help with dex build, not dex to damage, something more mathematically sound, and then a strength build.
In the back.
So there were comparisons made during the presentation last night that the shifter is kind of like the paladin of the druid side.
Yep, awful good. No, I'm kidding.
So in terms of spellcasting capacity, is it going to be a four-level caster?
No, it's not a spellcaster at all. It, that's more kind of story theme. It's you've got the druids and who are pretty good at this, but the defenders of the grove, the people who are all like, you know, the druids are sick of that town, go trash it, right? They'll send the shifters. And so it's kind of like a more martial arm of the church. But yeah, don't take that too literally. It's not a spell casting class.
Smite civilization.
There you go. Constructs you double damage against them.
Bonus damage against plastics.
Is there an effective way of building a healer out of a psychic? And if not,
well, there's a healing discipline right in the original book, if I recall correctly. And it turns out that my character in Iron Fang Invasion, I just started as a psychic who is a healer. And the way I'm doing that is Samsarin, and technically Mystic Past Life doesn't let, say, psychics as Arcane or Divine, but I pulled a few spells off the Spiritualist spell list as well to help me, but yeah, there's some healing disciplines that you can do.
That's like as a back healer, like the party.
I'm the main healer in the party.
Yeah, I think we find that whenever you're without a cleric, there's a bit of a challenge there. If you are the only healer in the group.
Intentionally so.
Yeah. A lot of that comes down to the fact that we think, you know, the cleric is one of the kind of four pillar classes of the game, right? Fighter, cleric, rogue, wizard.
Yeah.
You can swap those out for other characters, and that's perfectly fine, but you may run into some challenges, right? Obviously, yeah, I think...
You might buy a lot of wands.
Yeah, you might. I mean, like, you know, if you don't have a cleric, instead you have an oracle, you can certainly pull it off, but, you know, if you're not an oracle of life, it's a bit of a challenge, right? So yeah, I think you're going to run into the same problem. You can do it, but it requires you to jump through some extra hoops.
Because every party needs some religion.
Really important.
That's why we brought paladins.
Yeah, religion and politics. Bring it to any party.
Yeah, no, that always makes everything better. All right, more questions.
All right, let's go just for the shifter. Are they all going to be wearing amulets of Mighty Fist, or do they have other ways not probably when they're really?
No, they've got an ability. Well, you know, you probably at some point in time are going to at least think about getting that amulet. But they do have a claw, a shifter's claw, where even when you're in humanoid form, you can go, haha, watch this, baby. And it gets better as you go up in level, and then you can take those abilities when you get wild shape. and you can put it in basically the natural attack that you need it to be in. So
you're still going to want that plus.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Math-wise, crunching the numbers, you want the plus. But I would say, and you guys correct me if I'm wrong, the Shifter Claws ability has probably the most powerful bypasses DR as if of any similar ability that gives you the ability to bypass DR as if it was something.
Because, you know, when you raise civilization because they're being too uppity, right, you have to be able to get through some DR.
Since I think it eventually bypasses Epic, in addition to a lot of the other things some other classes do.
All right, who else has some
I saw one back there.
I'm going to literally throw the gauntlet. The gauntlet. How does it work? I've never seen it. No one's ever been able to really explain it to me when I could understand. Is it a weapon?
Oh, that.
Actually an event for charity.
charity event that was last week.
I thought it was going to be about the charity event.
Yeah.
Or the adventure.
So we have a proto answer to that, which is not necessarily the same one from the lone wolf question, but we have not made.
We've
not made an official final answer.
It's a no challenge. Questions. Is what it is. The gauntlet falls in kind of this really weird space because we're like, well, conceptually, you punch with it just like you punch with your fist. It's not like you're doing anything special. You just put on a piece of metal. There are some rules considerations, though, about being like, oh, well, now does... I mean, do we really want to have a situation where monks everywhere are like, well, that's the way to get Flaming Fists, so all of our monks suddenly are wearing big metal gauntlets. It's like, what? That kind of ruins the look of the monk, right? All of a sudden it becomes this weird thing. So there's some rules challenges floating around with the gauntlet, both from a mechanical sense and just kind of from a conceptual sense of what we actually want gauntlets to be and what we want them to do. That I think has kind of stayed our hand on making any clear pronouncement. I think we've got one that's coming, we just haven't... We didn't like want to drop it the day before PaizoCon or anything like that, but it is, we've been seeing a lot of discussion on the boards about it, and it's been rising in some FAQ threads, so.
Right.
It's on our radar, but I don't think we've tackled it just yet.
There's some contradictions in the core rulebook.
Yeah.
Whatever we rule, it's going to contradict one of the two things that is said that are mutually exclusive, so we have to be very careful about that.
So I think interesting side note, and hopefully you do too. Other than putting together books and figuring out, how new systems are going to work and whatnot, we've got Mark, who goes through the various message boards, FAQ threads, and when we find something that people are asking a lot of questions with, we basically sit around as a group and discuss it, and sometimes we don't have a real clear answer at first. And a lot of times, Mark is really good at finding easy answers so we can, keep the FAQ things rolling. But yeah, we've got a few of them that it's all, wow, that's a real puzzle. And we're going to have to, take all the various pieces, take a look at them, come up with the best answer, and sometimes make changes to the rules that we know that will cause the internet to burn on fire, which I just laugh at, right? Because I like watching stuff burn. And that's definitely one of them. And those pop up every time. So when you see an FAQ thing rise like that, and we just seem to be silent, we're not ignoring it. We're just in deep contemplation of what
We're like a court.
It's generating that much discussion because it's not a clear-cut issue.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, there are people, whenever you see something on the boards that ends up generating an awful lot of discussion and topic. The reason why sometimes we don't get to answering that right away is because it is incredibly complicated.
Yeah.
Right? Especially when you look at something like gauntlets. The example you brought up is kind of textbook for this. Because it's not just the core rulebook. It's not a book that came out, last year. This is a book that goes this is the first book of the game, and its rules have echoed through other supplements and have been reinforced or contradicted by things further down the line. And before we make a ruling on it, we have to go and take all of that into account and figure out ultimately what we're trying to do is make sure what gives us the best play experience, right? I mean, that's kind of the number one goal at all times is what's the most fun? Like, what is good for the game, for people at the table that isn't, you know, broken or easily abused. It's just good. And sometimes that answer is not the answer that the fan base is going to want to hear, right? Because they've been using it one way for a long time, and they've been relying on, you know, and I'm not even specifically talking about gauntlets now, but you know, there are rules that people are like, oh yeah, that's the way we've been doing that forever, and it's really good, you know, and it's giving us huge advantages, right. And then we come in and are like, yeah, it don't work like that anymore. And the Jingasa.
That was actually an errata. But,
no, I know, but I mean, that's the sort of thing where it's like, we realize that a thing is broken and not working the way we want it.
The FAQs can sometimes make them even angrier because they're not necessarily wrong. Like, usually it's an ambiguity. Yeah. Like, with those arrows that we did recently, like, nobody except you actually knew, because when you created the rules of what a +3, +4, +5 weapon could bypass, what was going to happen.
Yeah.
And I was doing it the wrong way for a while.
Yeah. And we don't even, very frequently, we you know, even as a group, don't necessarily agree. Right, so sometimes it takes us a while to come to consensus on an issue before we...
And a lot of times, because Stephen and Mark and I share an office, so Mark would be like, okay, guys, what do you think, how does this work, do you think? And half the time we're like, make Jason answer that one. So it's not clear-cut enough for us to...
Yeah. That's a mess, so that could go either way, make Jason do it.
Jason's fault, the answer is Jason's fault.
The odds are high that isn't that
could be, case, but... So. Yeah, sometimes we'll get a hung jury out on something, and if it's too hung, like, we only answer a question if at least the worst anyone thinks about it is, I don't really like that, but we'll go with it. If anyone is like, no, and two sides say that, we just won't answer it until we can find an answer that satisfies all of us at least enough that we can say, okay, I see that, even if it's not my favorite.
And a lot of them are informed by, like, okay, let's see what's happening in PFS with this role and how people are interpreting it.
Yeah, we'll go talk to the PFS folks for some frequency, right? And just be like, how is this working for you guys in the play space? You know,
I have an insight into the PFS team. So.
Yeah. Yeah, one of the reasons I mentioned is some of the newer stuff that involves gauntlets, like the fiends, the gods.
That's exactly what Jason was talking about in terms of later things that contradict. It's almost the textbook. I would say the textbook is probably Bardic Masterpieces, which very clearly there are two groups of people who were making books that had very different opinions about how they worked and continued to produce masterpieces that some of them were like one way and some of them were like another way, and that is probably something that will bedevil us unless we have several weeks to have someone only working on revaluating the Bard.
Hey.
So I play a decent amount online, and I know one of the common things that a lot of games are starting to do online is they'll take feat tax rules into account. Are you aware of those?
Feat tax rules?
So there's an alternate rule system that people have posted on a forum that have sort of melded some of the feats together or changed how some of them work, like dodge and mobility or mind.
Sure.
That was something maybe you guys might have had an opinion on that.
I don't think I've seen that specific thread, but we do.
I understand that some people are like, well, I don't want to, that feat is, I want the good feat that's right after it. I don't want to take the first feat. That's just a gateway. And in some cases, that's very intentional, right? I mean, we designed it that way because we knew we wanted to give out a good feat. We wanted this feat to do something that we couldn't just let you have because it was better than a feat. So sometimes we'll put a lesser feat. I mean, dodge is certainly a decent feat.
Combat expertise is more the...
Yes.
Combat expertise is definitely in that category of like, I really don't want to take that, but I really want to get at, you know, improved trip.
I have a good answer for this one, actually. Check out Starfinder. No, and I'm serious, because I did... One of the things when they pulled us back on was I did the first pass through the feat section, and... So, we tried to take out all the feat taxes. We then found out, interestingly enough, taking them all out actually makes people not happy because of the fact that you want to have a little bit of things, the structure of things going together, so people feel like they're working with you to build that character and get those things rather than just like being handed on in a platter and everybody's good at these things. So, but We were able to, I think, put in only the most minimal footprint enough to be satisfying and remove all the big feet taxes in Starfinder.
Yeah, and I think the feet tax is something we generally don't do a lot of anymore when we're building new feats. Usually it's like, well, how can we make this feat work at the cost of one feat rather than making it so good that it really costs two feats to get
there? Yeah, and we've also shifted a bit more into using prerequisites that are more gate-locked based on your character level or your character's features. That way, we don't have to make you take two other feats before you take that feat. We just prevent you from taking that feat until you're like 9th
level,
where it's more appropriate for you to have that ability.
Right. Offhand, I would say the only time I remember us doing something similar to that was sometimes when it's a quote tax, but actually something that's helping you, almost like helping you take your medicine, like things like having skill feats that help you with the social skills and intrigue when you're using the other intrigue feats, because it's not sexy and you might not be like, oh yeah, I definitely want to get a bonus on the social skills, but they sort of fit thematically together, but very rarely.
So because basically we're an extension of the 3rd edition rule set, and certain design choices were made in 99 and 2000 that were really sort of revolutionary at the time and seemed very awesome, and the longer we go on and refine the thinking of that, we're like, well, you know, just blank numbers is not really that much fun. It would be much better to do this and this, but since we're dealing with that momentum, going back and sort of backward engineering that within Pathfinder would create an utter mess, right? There'd be just mass confusion and everything else. And so Mark makes a really valuable point. You want to see newer thought on what we think that, you know, feats should do? Yeah, take a look at Starfinder.
There's also a lot of stuff, I think, when they were designing that first one. Since then, we have seen the metagame of it.
Yeah.
It's like, no, the Cloak of Resistance is not a cool item you can end up with that gives you bonus on your saves. It is a mandatory item that everybody feels they need to have the saves that they...
Well, and Unchained is a place where you can also see some ideas of getting around some of that stuff. And I think it's very telling that when Steven made the sort of stamina unlocks for all the feats in Unchained, very common one, when Logan and I were going through it, we saw that Steven had often put, when you have stamina, you don't need combat expertise, you don't need 13 ints, or you don't need combat expertise to do this one.
Yeah. And so we got time for maybe just one more question. I like to wrap our panels a little early so that the next panel can come in here and get set up. Anybody got one last question? In the back.
Will we ever get an official answer as far as what borough rules are? Because
did you just ask me what borough rules?
Official answer, use the donkey stat block.
So you're fired.
So funny story, I started, before I was hired by Paizo, my first gig was freelance for the Advanced Player's Guide, and I did a lot of spells and feats and various parts, and you know, as I'm trying to figure out what to put in that book and looking for design space, I'm like, oh, I could do a burrow spell. And I take it, you know, and Wes sent me a PDF of the rules so I can search it, and I'm like, burrow.
Yeah, I forgot to put it on.
Burrow. Okay, that monster's got it. That monster's got it. That monster's got it.
Yeah, I forgot to put it in, okay? Yeah, that one's on me. I've been hearing this for like 8 or 9 years. The answer is, yeah, we should probably put that somewhere. I don't know where now.
I know. It's like, Starfinder Core rulebook has it. Was the first thing that Owen said about the movement section.
Yeah, now it does make me think that maybe we should throw in an ultimate wilderness. Do
it's just a random sidebar.
Burrow Spade, this is what it's done all along.
Yeah, exactly.
Or C, Starfinder Core rulebook page.
Preface. That's in the preface.
That will give
there we go.
We'll put it in the appendix.
I mean, we do have, one of the funny things in Ultimate Wilderness is, since we have two plant races, we noticed that we had to jump through a lot of hoops with archetypes to let those plant races actually do some of the things that are intrinsic in classes. And so finally, I said, why don't we just say plant character races don't have all these immunities?
And everybody's like, we could do that? And I'm like,
we do make this shit up.
We asked them to write a plant shifter.
We get that quite a bit in the office, actually, you know, where, you know, like Rob will come in and be like, well, we need to design this whole new monster. And I'm like, so it's a fire giant with that can cast some cleric spells. Yeah. He's like, yeah, we need to make a whole new monster. I'm like, just take a fire giant, give it some cleric spells.
Right.
He's like, we can't do that.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, you can. I don't care. Just do it. I don't need anything. Just give it a couple clerks.
No, if you look at the Starfinder monster creation rules, you can definitely.
Yeah.
It makes it very clear that you can just do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Just do what you need to do.
Bob was so happy.
Yeah.
It's rare to see.
Was not happy.
No, for
he was
years,
as happy as Rob.
I would say that. I'm like, Rob, just do that. And he goes, Steven, you can't just do that. I'm like, yeah, you can.
Yeah.
But over time, he's like. You can't just.
We control the vertical and the horizontal.
Once it was in the book, he really had permission to just do that, though. So
you know, and that's Rob in a nutshell.
I just should have taken his core rule book and written in the front cover, "Do whatever you want."
All right, have final authority.
Yeah. So. All right. Well, thank you very much for coming, everybody. Hope you guys had a good time, and I hope you guys are enjoying your PaizoCon. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for another edition of the No Direction Podcast PaizoCon 2017 seminar coverage, made possible with the help of Justin Sluder and Ryan Hiller of Geek Dad. To find more great Pathfinder audio, go to NoDirectionPodcast.com.